talks there in verse 24 about sufferings. I want to assure you right away that he is not referring to him adding anything to what was accomplished by Christ at the cross. Paul, just like you and I as Christians, was a steward. He was a steward. He had been given the gospel. He'd been given other responsibilities as well. And very often in those days, if you were a steward, your job was to manage someone else's house and to look after a whole lot of their affairs. Still the case when God gives us something to do, specifically in the work. 1 Corinthians 4, stewards are to be trustworthy. And in Ephesians 3, very importantly, verse 2, 7, and 8, God appoints stewards to specific duties and callings in the church. Not me. Mount Marion called their own minister. I made it very plain with them at the start that I would not be. It would be them would call, and if they didn't call anybody, then they wouldn't get anybody. It was as simple as that. So they done that, they prayed about it, and they looked to the Lord, and the Lord, God willing, has given Mr. Story a stewardship there down in Mount Marion. And this type of situation, whether it's Paul's or anybody else's, it can be challenging and demanding. And yet whatever we do for the Lord, we would never want to look upon it in a grudging way. Remember Jonah. We can understand something of Jonah's feelings when he knew that the Ninevites had been less than pleasant or even kind or merciful toward his own people, and he didn't want to preach to them. But his attitude was wrong. He was full of resentment, very angry, and whenever he did go to preach to them, he was less than half-hearted in his preaching. But that passage in Jonah shows us that God uses his word in spite of imperfect instruments, which Jonah was. But he went there and he preached the word. He was a steward with the gospel. And Paul, as he preached, had great joy in his heart. Jonah, as he preached, was as sour as could be. And he was even disappointed because there were results after his preaching. A most unusual situation. Mostly when preachers see one soul won now and again to the Lord, they're very happy indeed, whatever age that person might be, whether it's a child or an older person. But I mentioned Christian joy there that Paul had. It is very precious to you. And you value your Christian joy. But there's some things that will steal it away from you. One of those things is circumstances. Sadly, another one of those things is people. And sometimes Christian people will steal it away from you. And another one of those things is worry. And yet another one of those things is losing focus. Losing focus on the Lord. But we want to say also that Christian joy can be nurtured by humility. Not into sensationalism. As I said, we're just a small work in the great scheme of things. Some are big across the United Kingdom, and some are not. And they're all the Lord's at the end of the day. And wherever we are, a Christian joy is nurtured by devotion to God, by trust in the Lord, and by humility. And taking the task he gives us gladly and getting on with that task. Christian joy is something that is internal. If you allow me to read for you, that's what it says there in 2 Corinthians chapter 4. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 8. 9. It says, we are troubled on every side. This is the same apostle. Many, many difficulties. We are troubled on every side, yet not distressed. We are perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Cast down, but not destroyed. Paul was not complaining, but he was writing to these people that in case they too came up against these things, that they would take encouragement from the joy that he still had. Now, I'm not taking time this morning to turn to Acts chapter 28, where you will read there a little bit more about Paul's sufferings and his imprisonment. And it was from his imprisonment that he wrote to this church at Colossae. Colossians is one of his prison epistles. Joyful man, as busy as could be. I was going to say well-liked, but even among believers, he wasn't that well-liked. But he was used of the Lord. And generally speaking, among believers, he was received. Among the general public, they loathed him. Again, generally speaking. But from the prison, he wrote to the Colossian church with joy. And if I can just read what it says over there in Acts chapter 5, you see something of the attitude that he had and that the early New Testament church had as well. So Acts chapter 5, verse 41. God's men have been now arrested and they have been treated badly. Betimes, some of them have been killed, but they've now been given a hiding in verse 40, beaten them there, and said, you're not to preach about the gospel and Christ anymore. But in verse 41, it says, and they departed from the presence of the council, rejoicing that they were counted worthy to suffer shame for his name. A strange thing in the eyes of the world. So why was it that this early Christian church, New Testament church, or churches, in the midst of regular suffering and regular terrible situations, why was it in the midst of these things that Paul and the others, their hearts were still full of joy? These are not days where we suffer persecution in Northern Ireland the way that the apostle did in those days. But let's be real. You know about what's afoot at the present time to try to cancel out. That's really what it's about. To try to silence street preaching, gospel open airs in Belfast. And if that happens, it will happen everywhere else. And 20, 25 years ago, if you mentioned that, people would even have thought it was maybe, some people have thought of something not even to pray about because it'll never happen. Well, it's all happening now. And there could be changes in the days to come. And as we've often thought of the children growing up, unless things do change, they're going to grow up in a different world as far as freedom is concerned regarding the ones that you and I, the world that you and I grew up in. But let's look in at this situation as he wrote here to the church at Colossae, and he says, who now rejoice in my sufferings for you and fill up that which is behind of the afflictions of Christ in my flesh for his body's sake, which is the church. I want to look with you in what time I have left, finding positives in a negative scenario. Finding positives in a negative scenario. I want you to notice, first of all, there is allegiance confirmed. Allegiance confirmed. It's a very natural thing for you and I to shrink from any kind of hostility and to like acceptance. I think I mentioned that here or else in Mount Meron the other day, that from we're very young, we want acceptance. We naturally like people, if they don't like us, to at least tolerate us. And the thought of being opposed in a way that can lead to violence and to trouble because you're serving the Lord, or even to marginalization or to some kind of hassle, rather than show us up to be just hypocrites, that is something which confirms our allegiance. So I want to say to you, Christian, thankfully we're not opposed here in Ugly Village at the moment, nor in Hillsborough, nor Lisburn, nor Dungannon, nor any of our churches. As far as I know, we're still able to have the door opened. But remember that what was applicable to people here in their church situation, they had an everyday life. They had an everyday life that they had to live. Paul was writing to young Timothy there in 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 12. He says to him very simply and plainly, yea, and all that will live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution. And the word shall there is, it's definite. Something that will happen. I think I mentioned to you maybe the other week that the word persecution refers to pursue or to follow after as a hunting animal would follow after its prey. And sometimes it's done very deceitfully. Strangely enough, the other day, and I don't watch television really, but I saw this on the internet and just looked at it for 2 minutes. There was a bison, very, very young, but it was trying to take on a full-grown male lion, which wasn't going to work. But the young bison kept running at the male lion, and he kept backing away. And I thought, well, you can take out a lot bigger animals than this, but it was really, really crafty, because a mother bison could kill a lion with one blow if you hit him right. And he was actually backing round the bushes, and he backed round, and he seemed to be cowering and going away from this young bison, and he wasn't as if he was being defeated. Until he got it out of sight. And then in just a couple of seconds, folks, he slaughtered it. He slaughtered it, and that was a predator in a deceitful and cunning way, following after its prey until it got it in the right position. That's what the devil wants to do with you. Sometimes right up front, straight to your face, very, very often in a subtle way, follow after you to hit you at your lowest point, to capitalize upon your vulnerable point, or mine, or my weak point. And Paul now is writing to young Timothy, and he's saying, listen, don't think it's all going to be lovely meetings like we had last week, and God's people have very often. But in everyday life experience, and it's happening now in various places in the world. You know about that, folks. You know that there have been groups of believers in Gaza, in the cities there, and there are quite a number of them in Lebanon. I remember when the Reverend Johnson was in Armagh, there's a man from Lebanon came to take the prayer meeting there. I can't remember his name or anything, but I know the situation at times was horrendous. It was horrendous, the things that Christians are suffering. And because it's there today does not mean it might not be here in X number of years' time. It's been in the United Kingdom before. That's good enough for me to remember that it is a very real thing. But encouraging you there also in 2 Timothy chapter 3, in verse 9 it says, regarding wicked men, they shall proceed no further. Would you remember that when you're thinking about persecution? That God is in control? That he has his hand, as it were, on the thermostat, and things will only go as far as he permits them to go. Over in Psalm 34 and verse 19, it says, many are the afflictions of the righteous. And when you look at it back down through the centuries, that overall has been the case. Remember, we're looking here at a person's allegiance being confirmed because they're opposed. Because they're opposed. Over in 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 14, Peter here says, if ye be reproached for the name of Christ, happy are ye, for the Spirit of glory and of God resteth upon you. Now, there is another statement from Peter who confirms what I have just been saying. For for the Spirit of glory and of God resteth upon you. Men are seen, and women are seen to be different because of their standing out as the Lord's. That does not mean you have to be a troublemaker going around looking for a row. You'll not need to, because people will know whose you are. I think even when Stephen was given his testimony last Sunday night here, while there were maybe some people who were very acceptable and very sympathetic to what he was saying as a Christian, not everybody. Not everybody. But remember this persecution and this opposition, your allegiance can be confirmed through it. So that is a positive thing. While being opposed or negative, and Paul writing here to the Colossae church, he knew all about the heretics that were standing at the door looking in. And they were like that lion that I mentioned to you. They're very subtle. He knew all about that. And he wanted the believers here to be strengthened and to remember if because of opposition they were harassed and troubled, that in the midst of all that there was something positive. They would know. They would know who the people belonged to. Many years ago, and I can't remember exactly all the history of this incident, but there was a preacher called Charles Finney, and he was used of the Lord. There's no question about that. And it is said that one time he went into a place where there were a lot of men working, and a lot of those men would not have been gospel greedy. But whenever he went into where they were, and he just walked about speaking in general, they were weeping, and he wasn't preaching. They were weeping and he wasn't preaching. The Spirit of the Lord was resting upon him at that time. He stood out as the Lord's man, and in God's providence and sovereignty, his life made an impact. His allegiance was confirmed through his life. And a whole lot of those people who were not gospel greedy became gospel greedy and were one to the Lord. So finding positives in a negative scenario here, as far as Colossians were concerned and as Paul was concerned, their allegiance was confirmed. But there's another thought here in the midst of a negative scenario. There is continuance in communion. So whether a church is literally, or a people are literally suffering because of their faith, or maybe just hurt. Maybe you'll find some of the booklets we give out. You might find one or two in the dump. I hope you don't. But if that's the case and you sent one to someone and they dumped it and said, I don't even want it, you might be hurt. And whether it is in that situation or suffering as these people would, and Paul did, whatever the situation might be, it can have the tendency to draw you closer to the Lord. You don't go looking for any of the things that are unpleasant. But sometimes they have the effect of drawing us closer to the Lord. Over there in Philippians chapter 3 and verse 10, Paul says that I may know him and the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of his sufferings, being made conformable unto his death. Again, Paul had no contribution to make to what was accomplished at Calvary, but he knew what it was to suffer as a Christian. If by any means I might attain unto the resurrection of the dead, and then he goes on to talk about following after, and this one thing I do, and pressing toward the mark. It all drew him into closer friendship, or closer communion with the Lord. Folks, you remember, you've heard of George Whitfield, I'm sure you have. Sometimes when George Whitfield was preaching, there were lots of people, and you might think, oh, that was great, such a preacher, you know, people came around. Well, there's sometimes they would have killed him if they got away with it. And sometimes he, and sometimes John Wesley too, got away by the skin of their teeth. Woe to you when all men speak well of you. That was not the case with these fellas. But you know something? Before they went out to preach again, they were in close communion with the Lord. And whenever a thing is good, there's the scriptures that show us, we don't, again, we look for good days, times of revival, but we're always mindful of scriptures like Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 10, and it shall be when the Lord thy God shall have brought thee into the land which he sware unto their fathers. There's his promise. He's keeping it. And to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give thee great and goodly cities, which thou buildest not, and houses full of good things, which thou fillest not, and wells digged, which thou diggest not, vineyards and olive trees, which thou plantest not. When thou shalt have eaten and be full, then it says, then beware. All's good. The Lord's withheld, fulfilled his word. He's provided for them. His promises has been kept. But here's the possibility. It says, beware lest thou forget the Lord. That's just human nature. Forget the Lord. So taken up with what they have. You think of the Covenanters. They didn't have very much. They didn't have a nice building like this to meet in. They met out in the heather in Scotland. Sometimes, very often, in the freezing cold and in all kinds of weather. And it's been documented that very often the heather was stained with their blood. And they knew what it was, folks, to suffer. And some of them were far from eloquent, but they knew what it was to be in communion with God. To be in communion with the Lord. And in their negative scenario, one of the positives that they could take out of it was, it's drawn me closer to the Lord. Things have that kind of effect on us when they're not exactly as we want them to be. Or as I said, if someone does or says something that hurt you, other than go away and get vindictive and try and get them back, better bring it to the Lord. Bring it to the Lord, and therefore you're getting closer to him. I must move on here very quickly. I want to say in this negative scenario also, there's a thought of winsomeness. That's one thing you will notice with the Apostle Paul. His winsomeness. Very often, he and the people that he worked with were reviled and they were rejected, but they still had joy in the Lord. They still had joy in the Lord. And over there in Proverbs and chapter 11, I'll just read this for you. Proverbs 11 and verse 30. It says there, towards the end of the verse, he that winneth souls is wise. That's what you do. You might think that's what I'm supposed to do, but no, that's what we do. He that winneth souls is wise. And it's not a one-man band. It is a team effort as a congregation planted by the Lord. And he that winneth souls is wise. That is what we are about. It's very hard to do that if you put people off. Anybody can fight and start a bit of a row, even on the door. Harder to be winsome. Paul was winsome. He was always winsome. The church at Colossae, I believe, were winsome. And folks, today, there's so many of those people who are not interested in coming to any of your meetings. Your souls still need to be won. And you and I still need to be winsome. Over there in, again, 1 Peter. Moving on quite quickly here. 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 12. It says, having your conversation honest among the Gentiles, that whereas they speak against you as evildoers, and that's really what we've been saying. They speak against you as evildoers, they may, by your good works, which they behold or they see, glorify God in the day of visitation. Come to him through your life, through your winsomeness. And folks, you may never preach or be a missionary, but you can be winsome. Let's all try to be winsome, to look for this positive in a negative situation. It may be in your work this week. An opportunity to bite back and really hit somebody hard if they not literally but hit them hard if somebody says something that hurts you. What about being winsome? Then there's consolation. Ultimately, the church here would be rewarded. And the Lord, everything that you've done, everything that the people here have done for 25 years will be rewarded. I mentioned in the little booklet, and I mentioned it consciously on Sunday, that as I look down, I greatly miss the folk that have gone on to be with Christ. Very often in private conversations, they really encouraged me. They were always in their place. They just got on with it. Now they're gone. Now they're gone. But they're not gone without their reward. They're gone to their reward. This church at Colossae, long gone to the reward. The Apostle Paul, gone to their reward. So that is a consolation that there is in the future. But there's also consolation now. Consolation now, as we're looking for positives here in a negative scenario. There would be encouragement here for the church at Colossae to go on. There would be recognition that while the Lord has helped them, the Lord can do more than that. And there would also be the great benefit that they ultimately, as I mentioned, would be to society. It's still the same. It's still the same. You and I, trust, are encouraged to go on, knowing that God is can move at any time in a remarkable way, but nonetheless, in these days of small things, to continue to do what we can for him, recognizing the great benefit of an evangelical church to society. Lewis, down in the south of England there, I've never been to the church, but I'm very, very pleased to hear that the people around there, that there's going to be continually an evangelical church reaching out to them. It's equally important here. I trust the Lord will bless these few thoughts to your hearts this morning.